the last year, which is the nature of the development of the oral law and trying to understand where all this machlokas comes from. If you remember in the previous year, we presented a dispute between the Rambam and the Gaonim. Very briefly, the view of the Gaonim is that debate arose from forgetting the Torah or forgetting details of the Torah. Every single detail of the halacha, at least of Dinim De'oraisa, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. And therefore, how is it that there could be debate? Must be that the debate is because those details were forgotten. And the Gaonim cite the Gemara that says that Misharabu Talmid Eshamai V'Hilal Shaloshim Shukalat Zorach Rab Samach Lekas B'Yisrael, which tells us that it was actually the lack of Shimush Talmid Chachamim amongst the students of Shamai V'Hilal that caused this forgetting to take place. It might have also been triggered by the persecution at that time. One way or the other, the machlokas emerged from the forgetting, from the shichichas haTorah. The Rambam rejected that. He said, one second, when it comes to things for which there was a mesorah for Torah, for halacha Moshe Misinai or Perish Mekubal, those types of things were never forgotten. And that's why, when you look at the Gemara will have a debate, and occasionally it says something like, im Kabbalah hine kabel, vim lav yishalav tshuva. If you have a mesorah for that, we're not going to argue. There's never a machlokas about the mesorah. You can't malign the Chachmei HaMesorah and say they forgot so much. So if so, what is the source for debate? The source of debate is with respect to dinim that were not totally clarified at Sinai. In other words, even though the Gemara says, and Chazal tells us, and the Rambam tells us that Pratosav Dikdu Keha Nemer L'Moshe MiSinai, nevertheless, that doesn't mean all the Pratim and Dikdukim. There were still things that were not given to Moshe at Sinai. And when it comes to those things, so then there is machlokas. Why is there machlokas? There's machlokas because people don't always interpret the same text in the same way. And even though the hermeneutical principles, the Mido, Shatar, Nidrashus, Bahen, were given at Sinai, and for the most part, there's no debate about those types of things, but still, how to apply them is not always clear. So what does the Gemara mean that when it says that with the debate proliferated because the Talmidei Shamai V'Hilal Lo Shimshu Kol Tzorach, it means that because they weren't Meshamesh Kol Tzorach, so they were less proficient in terms of using these rules. And accordingly, when two people with less proficiency try to apply the same rules to interpret a particular text, so naturally they're more likely to come to machlokas. That's the approach of the Rambam. We mentioned at the end of Shir that the Chavos Yair in Tshuva Kuf Tzadi Beis poses a number of questions upon this view of the Rambam. The Chavos Yair was an Achron. He died in the year 1702, and he has a fascinating tshuva on this topic where he considers different approaches. But what we're going to do is consider today, and you could see these in your source sheets, same source books as last time, six of his challenges to the Rambam, and we'll try to consider how the Rambam might respond to these challenges. So, objection number one that the Chavos Yair has is that we find so many machloksin about so many details in the Rambam. So that would certainly indicate, according to the Rambam, that relatively a small percentage of details were given at Sinai. Because if it's the case that anytime you find machlokas, it means it relates to a detail that wasn't given, and there's so much machlokas, must be that there were so few details given. And so how could that be? That's his kasha. So what might the Rambam say? So the Rambam seems to address this in a couple of ways. Number one is that the Rambam says that even according to, in Achanami, well, let's say like this. The Rambam writes that when it comes to the general principles, there is more or less agreement. There's a lot of agreement. It's mostly with respect to details and oftentimes atypical cases where we find machlokas. But still, you can't really deny that there's a lot of machlokas. So I think the Rambam would say, yeah, in Achanami, that means many of the details were not given to Moshe the Sinai. And just to consider a place where the Rambam suggests this, take a look at the source. You have it over here from the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam, Shorosh Beis. He writes, Kvar bi'arnu b'psichas chiburenu b'ferish ha-Mishnah. We've already explained in the Hakdamah to Perish Mishnayis, Sherov dinei ha-Torah yotz'o b'shalosh esrei midosh ha-Torah nidrashas bahen. Most dinim, indeed, emerge from the midosh ha-Torah nidrashas bahen. B'shadin yotz'o b'midah me'osan ha-midos. Hine pa'amim tipol ba'am machlokas. And when it comes to a halacha that's yotze from the midosh ha-Torah nidrashas bahen, so then commonly, there is going to be a machlokas. B'shiyeh sham dinim, Haim Perushim Mekubalim, Moshe, and Machlokas Bahem. There are other types of halachos that are Perushim Mekubalim, about which you don't find any machlokas. They're a tradition. Sometimes, as we mentioned last time, the Gemara will bring a raya from the Midosh HaTorah Nidrashas Bahem for something that was known Alpi Mesorah, Alpi Kabbalah. Fine. So, but what's relevant for us is that he's saying, yes, in Achinami, Rov Dinei Torah. Majority are learned from Midos Shehatorah Nidrashas Bahen. I think there's a shtickel raya to this in the Gemara in Yevamos, Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph. Maybe, I think, coming up soon in Daf Yomi. But without going into too much details of the whole Shekel HaTorah over there, the Gemara says, Kol Dinei Torah Pirshu Rabbanan, Elmed Rabbanan V'krav Asmach Me'almahu. The way the Gemara seems to read, especially according to the Rambam, is that in Achanami, almost all the dinim of the Torah were understood by chachamim, meaning to say they are interpretations of the text. It's true that we bring rayos to this, but the rayos are in asmachta. So according to the Rambam, this might have been telling us that, in fact, large parts of Torah, like he says over here, rov dinei Torah, are derived from the Midos Shatorah Nidrashas Bahem. So maybe the Rambam would say to this Kasha in Hachinami. Okay, question number two.
Where's the Gemara in Ramos?
What is the Gemara?
Where is
Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. So question number two. The Iker Yesod of the Rambam is that things that are part of the Mesorah were never forgotten. So there's a Gemara, Temura, Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, that seems to tell us explicitly, Fakert. The Gemara tells us that as soon as Moshe died, 3,000 halachos were forgotten, or according to another version of this story, 1,700 halachos were forgotten. And the Gemara records how they asked Yeshua to ask Hashem, what's the answer to these questions? After all, Yeshua was a Navi. And Yeshua refused, lo b'shamayim hi. So what recourse is there to solve these problems? So the Gemara tells us that eventually Asniel ben Kenaz saved the day. He recreated using svara, using logic, these halachos, and he solved all of these questions that were forgotten. So this seems to be a meforsh pirch on the Rambam, because here we have a forgetting of the Torah as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu died. And the Rambam writes that everything that Moshe taught, things that are Perush Mekubal, were not forgotten. According to the Gaonim, we could understand this. Must have been, even the Gaonim would concede that there was some forgetting earlier, but we see explicitly that there was forgetting. So I think the answer might be as follows, and we'll see in a moment that we have perhaps a raya or an example of this in our Parsha, Parsha Shmini. So perhaps the Rambam would say the following. What type of halachos were forgotten? So if we say that these were the types of halachos that were a Mesorah, that were Perush HaMekubal, that were Halacha Moshe Mesinai, then we shall suggest in a couple of minutes, they couldn't actually even be recreated using Svara, as Asniel ben Kenaz did. Because halachos that are rooted in a halacha moshe mesinai and a perush mekubal require a mesorah. So what type of halachos were forgotten? Perhaps these were halachos that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, or Moshe Ubeis Dino, derived using Svara, using Perushim, the Midosh Atar Nidrashus Bahen. In other words, what the Rambam says, the Rambam doesn't say nothing was ever forgotten. The Rambam says that the things about which we have a tradition for, those things weren't forgotten. And if somebody forgot them and somebody else had a tradition, then the other position would accept the tradition of the first person who has that tradition. So the Rambam doesn't say that things weren't forgotten. So what types of things were forgotten? The types of things were forgotten were ideas that perhaps Moshe Ubeis Dino darshaned themselves. This process began during Moshe's lifetime. And I think it's particularly meduyuk, actually, in that Gemara, because the Gemara over there writes, there's two versions of the story. And the first one, like I mentioned, it was 3,000 halachos that were forgotten. And then the Gemara continues and it says over there, B'masnisin tana, elef reshvameos kalin v'chamurin, v'gzeiro shavos v'dikduke seifrim, nishtachu b'yamei avloi shel Moshe. So what was forgotten? The Gemara says it was kal v'chomers, it was gzeiro shavos, it was dikduke seifrim. So what does that mean? Kal v'chomer was forgotten. Do you need a Messiah for kal v'chomer? The answer is no. So what does it mean that was forgotten? It means that Moshe Rabbeinu or Moshe Ubeis Dino made a certain kal v'chomer. So that wasn't pshat that Moshe received that halacha mipi agvura, but rather Moshe Ubeis Dino, they were mechadish that. Gzeir Shavos, to some degree you need a Kabbalah, but to some degree how you apply the Kabbalah and the like is also subject to the analysis of humans. Certainly, it says it was there were dikduke soifrim that were forgotten. Dikduke soifrim, again, implies things which were derived using the human intellect, the soifrim, the chachamim of the day of Moshe, of Moshe's days. So those were the things that were forgotten. And therefore, perhaps this Gemara Tmura is not a kasha on the Rambam. Now, I should point out as well an important methodological point, which is that we suggested a solution for the Rambam from this Gemara and Shmura. But let's say we couldn't come up with a solution. Is that a pircha on the Rambam? So the Rambam tells us in many places, especially in his Hakadama to Perka Chelek, that when you see a agadita that contradicts a known or understood principle, if you have a way to interpret it, then good. And if not, so you should acknowledge that there's something deep here. There's something profound here. You shouldn't be dismissive of it, but you shouldn't necessarily change your mahalich that you know from other places based off of Akasha from Agadita. The Maral writes in the Baragola, that's what's meant when it says, the Ga'onim say, based off Chazal, Ein Meshivin Min Agada. What does it mean, Ein Meshivin Min Agada? You can't ask a kasha from Agadita. So some people said that means because Agaditas aren't so important. So you can't ask a kasha from it. So the Maral says, no, that's not what it means, that Agaditas aren't important. They're very important. But what it means is that you can't ask a kasha from it. Why not? Well, there could be a couple of reasons. Number one is that maybe it was a machlokes in Chazal. In other words, the Rambam might tell you, let's say you concluded that this Gemara Tmura was Taka Kasha in the Rambam. But the Rambam might say, there's a machlokes in Chazal about this matter, and the Gemara Tmura reflects one view. We already saw how the Rambam does that frequently. We saw that, for example, in terms of the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, how he dealt with the Kasha from the Mishnah and Brachos, Homel Kansipo Yagir Rachamach Meshaskin Isai, and the Gemara says that they are Chukim, they are Gzeros Milafanai. So the Rambam says, Taka, that goes against my position that mitzvos have reasons, but we don't accept that view. Rambam does that frequently. So, first of all, maybe the Rambam would say, yeah, the Gemara Tmura is Taka against me, but I don't accept that view. I think the other view in Chazal is correct. And especially in this case, where perhaps there is a lot of evidence for the Rambam's view in Chazal. We'll see a little later that there are a number of statements in Chazal that support the Rambam's position. So A, it might be a machlokas. B, the Rambam writes and the Maral writes, there might be some type of deeper understanding of this Gemara. So you can't ask a kash from a Gadita because maybe the Gadita shouldn't be understood kipshuto. Maybe there's some other understanding of the Agadita. So stamaze, you should appreciate that just because you have an Agadita and Tmura that's against the Rambam, it's not necessarily a pircha. But as we were suggesting, perhaps there's a very simple solution for the Rambam, which is that the Gemara, the halachos that were forgotten, were not halachos about which there's a Kabbalah. And I thought that maybe we have an example of this idea from this week's Parsha. What do I mean, this idea? The idea that even in the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was the type of masumatan, the type of interpretation of seeking to understand Torah law that we find later. And you find this, of course, after the death of Nadav and Avihu. Reb Tzadok actually makes this type of point. The type of pilpul that we find in Gemara, we find as a discussion between Moshe and Aaron in our Parsha. How so? So if you remember, in our Parsha, Aaron's two sons die. Aaron and his other sons were therefore Onanim. And the question is, should they eat from the Chatas of Rosh Chodesh? There were three Chatos brought on that day. And Moshe Rabbeinu told them that these should be eaten from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even though Aaron and his sons were Onanim, following the death of Nadav and Avihu, Moshe understood or told them that there is an exception in this case and they should be eaten anyway, ba'aninos. There's a din d'oraisa that someone who is an onain, is aser b'achilas kachim. So, okay. So Moshe Rabbeinu understood that halacha applied to the seir of Rosh Chodesh as well. And Aaron disagreed. Aaron said that exception to the rule was true only with respect to Kadshei Sha'ah, the other two karbanos. But with respect to the seer of Rosh Chodesh, it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, remember? So that's a regular karban that was brought in Rosh Chodesh. It was Kadshei Doros. It wasn't Kadshei Sha'ah. So therefore, the exception shouldn't apply, and these shouldn't be eaten by aninos, and therefore the karban was burnt. So what happened? So if we look at the psukim in our parsha, there's this conversation between Moshe and Aaron, and it's very terse. It's not clear, right? The seer, it says, Darosh, Darash, Moshe. Moshe had some type of argument, and he was upset that it was burnt, and Aaron's responds, and he said some type of other argument, not clear what he was saying, and Moshe was mekabel the argument of Aaron. So if you take a look at the Gemara in Zvachim, Kuf Aleph, Amid Aleph, going on to Amid Beis, it's basically more than a blot of Gemara. Most, you know, the basic ideas cited by Rashi in our Parsha. So it elaborates on the arguments, what was Moshe tining, what was Aaron tining. Each one had their argument. But the point is that what do we have over there? We have, again, the type of analysis, we could call it Talmudic analysis, already taking place between Moshe and Aaron. Moshe held that it should be chayev to eat it. And Aaron said, no, there's a chiluk. There's a chiluk between Kadshei Sha'ah and Kadshei Doros. And therefore it makes sense that those that were Kadshei Sha'ah should be eaten and those that were Kadshei Doros should not be eaten. And Moshe agrees. Moshe agrees that it was right. And so what does this have to do with us? So what it has to do with us is exactly the point that we have the type of analysis that takes place after the death of Moshe took place while Moshe was alive as well. And that type of analysis was different, like the Rambam says, than those things that were given directly to Moshe Rabbeinu through that Hashem communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu directly. So what we're suggesting is it could be with respect to those types of halachos, that's where they were There was the forgetting upon the death of Moshe. But regarding things about which there was a Kabbalah, so then, as Rambam suggests, there was no forgetting after the death of Moshe.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So remember at the end of one of the classes, I mentioned the Gemara that in Yerushalmi that says, Afilu mashatam vasek asid the horos. I know, but my question is, so it says, Afdei rabu kfar nemar l'moshe b'sinai, but if you have any machloikis in the Gemara, right? So you have one rabbi paskening one way, the other rabbi paskening the other way. According to this Gemara, both opinions were already paskened from Moshe Rabbeinu from Sinai.
Right. So remember, I told you when you asked that question how the Rambam reads that Gemara, but we'll get back to it a little bit later. But according to the Rambam's understanding of that Gemara, the Gemara doesn't say that, first of all. It doesn't say Asad L'Chadish, it says Asad L'Horos. But besides that, the Rambam understands that differently. And that's not a result of forgetting, but rather something else, like the Rambam says. That was the idea that the ideas behind each view is rooted in Tyrus Moshe Rabbeinu. But it doesn't mean that Hashem went ahead and told Moshe Rabbeinu literally every chiddush that every Talmud Vasek was ever going to say. But that's just Hashem, we'll get there.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
The Gemara in Zvachim, where was that again?
Kuf Aleph. Amud Aleph, Amud Beis.
In Ein Mishim Me'agada, that principle is the Maharal just made it up?
No, the Gaonim say it. And the Maharal is explaining it. Meaning to say, there are a number of statements that the Gaonim say, which seem to minimize the value, the importance, the authority of Agadita. And there were those who went ahead and they said, oh, you see from here that Agadita isn't really meant to be taken very seriously. And what the Maharal is saying, I think this idea, it appears in the writings of Rav Haigon and others. It's quoted in the Sefer Gaonim and the Sefer Eshkol. So Rasad Yagon might say a similar type of thing. So what the Maharal is saying is don't interpret that type of statement. This is again the Maharal in Bergola. Don't interpret that type of statement as implying that Agadita isn't important, right? Which is what you could have said. You could have said, why Ein Mishim in Agada? Because Agadita is not authoritative. It's not important. You could argue with Agadita's. So the Maharal says that's not the pshat. It means you can't ask a kasha, you can't ask a pircha from an Agadita because maybe the Agadita has some type of deeper secret understanding. Or maybe it's a machlokes or the like. And that's an idea I think that you more or less see in the Rambam as well in his introduction to Perkei Chelek. In his introduction to Perkei Chelek, the Rambam goes ahead and says that there's sort of three schools of thought on how to interpret Agadita. He writes the same thing in his Hakdama to Marnevuchim. And he writes that there are those, the opinion the of the masses is that Agadita should be understood literally. And he says this is obviously wrong because many Agadita shouldn't be understood. They make no sense if they're understood literally. What do you think? Og Melech HaBashan was like 10,000 meters tall, and he picked up a mountain and put it over, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. So then he says, the second school of thought, these are more educated people, and they say, since the Agadita's understood literally don't make sense, so we'll be dismissive of Agadita's. In other words, Agadita's aren't meant to be taken so seriously. And he says, this is wrong. Their mistake is even worse than the first school of thought, because they're malagal devei chachamim. And he says the third group school of thought, this is the smallest. He says it's so small, you might not even be able to call it a group. But the correct approach to Agadita is that you have to, it is serious. It's the words of Chazal when the same Chachamim who say Halacha also say Agadita. So it's not something that you could be dismissive of. At the same time, you also have to understand that it shouldn't always be understood literally. And when you see an idea in the Agadita that seems problematic, so you should seek to try to understand really what it means on a deep and profound level, and sometimes in a way that isn't literal. And if you succeed, then great. And if not, your approach should be, there's something deep here, you're trying to go, but I don't know what it means. I don't understand it. So you shouldn't necessarily upend your previously established principle from an idea in Agadita, but at the same time, you have to take it seriously. And so if you don't understand it, you should say, the chisaron is in me. I don't understand it. Not in the Agadita, not in Chazal. Okay. But that's an important idea. That's why we're bringing it up over here in terms of understanding the kashas on the Rambam. In other words, if the Chavos Yair asks a kash in the Rambam from a particular Agadita, so if we could explain it, then good. In this case, I think we suggested an explanation that makes sense. But even if we couldn't explain it, we wouldn't necessarily conclude that Shain, the Rambam, must be wrong. Okay, onwards. So another kasha that the Chavos Yair asks is that the Rambam seems to say that when did debate proliferate among the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel? Meaning to say, until that point, there is uniformity in matters that are subject to human interpretation and svara. The Chavos Yair wonders how that could be. How could it be that for so long, for more than 1,000 years, everybody agreed in terms of how to darshan a particular pasuk, how to darshan a particular word, and now all of a sudden, there's such machlokas. One would have certainly expected that there'd be machlokas well before this. So now you could say, well, this is also kasha and the ga'inim, because it's schwer to say there was no machlok, no shikha until that point. But all of a sudden, there was tons of shikha. But he says, okay, that's not such a kasha, because that's what they say. There was a big yirida at that point. But according to the Rambam, it's very, very schwer. There was never any machlekes how to darshan a pasuk until this point. That's his kasha. So what would the Rambam respond? So first of all, as we noted, the Rambam does say that, yes, when you're a less skilled practitioner of the Midosh HaTorah Drash HaSpan, there will be more machlokas. But the basic answer, the more fundamental answer to the question, is what we've already said before, which is that the Rambam does not claim that there was never machlokas until Talmidei Shammai VeHillel. The Rambam says that when there was machlokas up until that point, it was resolved. But of course there was lots of machlokas, maybe less machlokas, but of course there was machlokas before Talmidei Shammai VeHillel came around. And the Rambam writes this explicitly in the Hakdama to the Perash Mishnayos. And perhaps I'll read you a little bit. I didn't put this on your sheets. Because I just found this point yesterday, rereading the Hakdama 2 days ago. But I think that this might even be the way the Rambam sort of understands the Gemara and Tmura. So the Rambam writes over there, the Kasher Mei Salva Shalom, after Moshe Rabbeinu died, Acha Shein Chil Yoshua Ma Shenetzal Alav Min HaPeirush, V'hichkim Izbonein Bo Yoshua Ma Jidoro V'chol Ma Shekibol Mi Moshe, Hu O'at, so everything about which Yoshua and the Zakenim had a Kabbalah, there was no machlokas. Someone who, when it came to something for which there was no Kabbalah, so then they extrapolated these dinim using the Midosh HaTorah Nedrashos Bahem. The Osam HaDinim Shotziu Yesh Dvarim Shelo Nafla Ben Machlokas Aval Iskinu Aleihem. When it comes to that category of law, so with the Rambam, his third of the five categories, sometimes there was no Machlokas. For Yesh Mem Shenafla Bo Machlokas Ben Shtei Adeos Zomer Bekov Vezomer Bekov. Kimido Shahakashal Derech Hatoychachos Yikara b'svaru seihem ha-mikra zeh. Shehaisa nofalas machlaikas. Ayu olchen achri arov, shenem achri matos. So what's the Rambam saying over here? He's saying black on white, that already upon the death of Moshe, machlokas began. Not machlokas about things for which there is a Kabbalah, but machlokas about things for which there wasn't a Kabbalah. And then each side argued their position and they would take a vote and they would decide. In other words, what's the Rambam saying? The Rambam is not saying that there is no machlokas until the days of Yoshua. The Rambam is simply saying that until the days of Talmidei Shammai Hillel. The Rambam is simply saying that there was no unresolved debate. There was debate, and when there was a debate, the matter was voted on. It could be, as I said, that sort of description of the events is the Rambam's take on the Gemara and Tamura. Otherwise, I don't know how Rambam knew that. So this point is elaborated upon in the Mishnah Torah as well. If we take a look at Hilchos Ma'amrim, this is Perk Aleph, Halacha Gimel, and Dalet, which you have in your source sheets. The Dvarim Shel Lameidim in Adin, Im Eskimu Aleim based in Agadol Kulan, Harei Eskimu, Vim Nechlku Behen, Holchan Achar Rov, Umotin Adin Achar Harabim, the Chen Exeris, Vatakanos Vim Hagos, Imro Miktsasan Shiroi Ligzor Gzeira, O Lisakin Takana, O Sheyanichu Ha'am Hamina Gazeh, the Ro Miktsasan Shein Roi Ligzor Gzeira, O the Law Zu, the Law Lisakin Takana Zu, the Law Laniach Hamina Zen Nosim Nosin Eluk Negrelu, Holchan Achar Ruban, Umotin Adavar Achar Harabim. Good. So whenever there was a machlekes, they would vote. Kshaya beis nagadol kayim lo isem machlekes Yisrael. As long as the beis nagadol was kayim, there was no machlekes be Yisrael. Elakol din shenole bosafik leechad Yisrael. Shol beis shibiro. Anytime there was a shaila about what the halacha was, so they would ask their local beis din. Im yadu amrulo im lav. Hareyashoel im oso based in o im shluchav olim Yerushalayim mishalim based in Shabarabayis. If they didn't know, so they would go up to Yerushalayim and ask the based in that was by Harabayis. Im yadu amulo vim lav hakol banu based in shal pesach hazara. Im yadu amulohen vim lav hakol banu lishkas agazus lebased in agadol v'shalim. Im hayadav reshinale barasafik luchol yadu etzol based in agadol bein mipi akabala bein mipi mida. Shadanu ba omrim yad im lo haya davar bar etzel based in agadol danin ba bishaitan the nosim davar ad sheyaskimu kulan o yamdu l'minyan v'yelcho achar harov v'yomu l'chala shalem kach halacha the holchamahan. So that's the way it always was. Every time there was a shayla that was not known, they would go to Yerushalayim and ask the shayla. Mishabatel based in Agadol, Rabsa Machlokes Bisrael. So what's the source of the Ribui Machlokes Bisrael? He doesn't say over here, the source was Talmidei Shammai Hillel Shloshim Shukal Tzarkan. What does he say? It was Bittul based in Agadol. And we have to figure out when this took place. We're going to work on that. But the Rambam tells us that what causes the proliferation of debate amongst Israel, it was Bittul based in Agadol, meaning to say the inability to resolve the Shaila by taking a vote. Until there was always machlokas, but there was always a resolution. There was always a means by which we could resolve the question. Once the Beis Nagadol was nisbatel, so then, naturally, there's a ribui machlokas. Okay. So now what's interesting here is we have two explanations for Ribui Machlokas B'Yisrael. And the Rambam really implies, as we'll see in a moment, that both of them took place around the same time. One of them was Ribui Sham Talmidei Shammai V'Hillel Shel Shem Shukal Tzorech. Number two was Bittul Sanhedrin Agadol. And they're both necessary. If you just had a Talmidim Shel Shem Shukal Tzorech, but you had a means of resolving their question, so there wouldn't be a proliferation of debate, because every question that arose could be solved. And likewise, if there was a bittul based in Agadol, but not a Talmidim Shloshim Shukal Tzarchan, there wouldn't have been an explosion of debate, because still, for the most part, there would have been agreement. But when these two factors came together, that's what led to the proliferation. So how is it that they both happened? And when did they happen? Did they happen at the same time? So take a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Peches Amid Beis, which you should have over here, where you'll see where the Rambam got this from. Tani Am Reb Yossi. Mitchila hayum arbi machlaikes. Lo hayum arbi machlaikes bi Yisrael. Originally, there wasn't so much debate amongst Yisrael. Ella, and now the Gemara says exactly what we saw in the Rambam. Ella based in Shal Shivim Be'echad. Yoshim b'lishkas agazis. V'shnei batei dinim shalas v'mishlosha hayu yoshiv al pesach arbaiz v'achad yoshiv al pesach azara. V'shar batei dinim shalas v'mishlosha yoshivim b'chol arayos ayaris b'Yisrael. Hotzrach adavar lishol sha'olim mibezin shabi Iran. Im shamu amru lahen v'im lav b'ayin l'zesha samach l'Iran. Im shamu amru lahen v'im lav b'ayin l'zesha al pesach arbaiz. Im shamu amru lahen v'im lav b'ayin l'zesha al pesach azara. The Omer Kach darashti v'kach darshu chaveirai. Kach lamadeti v'kach limdu chaveirai. Im shamu amru lahem v'im lav elu v'elu b'ayin l'shkas agazis. Nishala she'ela b'fnehem im shamu amru lahem v'im lav omdim l'minyin. Rabu ametamim tim'u rabu ametarin tiharu. Mishrabu talmidei shame v'hilol sheloshim shukal tzarka and rabu machlechetu Yisrael v'nasis toira kishtei toros. So what do we say over here? We say, originally there was no machlokas. Why? Because there's a means of resolution. Mishrabu talmidei shamai v'hillel. So then, rabs and machlokas was Yisrael to the point that it was nasa toira kishtei toiras. So what's the Rambam saying? I'm sorry, what's the Gemara saying? The Gemara's pointing out that there were the two sources for the proliferation of debate. Number one is talmidei shamai v'hillel sholoshim shukal tzarach. Number two is the inability to go to the Sanhedrin b'lishkas agazis and resolve every single question. So that is the answer to the Chavos Yair's Kasha. The Chavos Yair says, how could it be that there was no machlokas until Talmidei Shammai Hillel? The answer is, of course there was machlokas, but there was a way to resolve it. It was only after the two factors happened. Number one, Bittul Beis Nargadol. Again, we'll try to talk about in a couple of minutes when and why that happened. But it was only after Bittul Beis Nargadol plus that came to this proliferation. Okay. Before we get back to explaining when it happened, let's look at some of the other kashas from the Chavos Yair. So the next kasha the Chavos Yair asks is from numerous sources in Chazal that indicate that all details were given at Sinai. Meaning to say, remember, the Chiddush of the Rambam is that there are many details that weren't given at Sinai. So the kasha is, but don't we have a lot of sources that tell us all details are given at Sinai? So let's consider one such source. It's a Gemara Brachos Daf Hamad Aleph. I'm Rabbi Shimon Lakish. My dechsiv, madna et lecha es luchos ha'evan v'atayra ha'mitzvah asher kasavsi lo'rosam. So what is this pasuk referring to? This pasuk is referring to the things that were given at Sinai. What's included? So luchos, elu aseres hadibros. That's pretty straightforward. Torah zu mikra. Torah means l'chora, Torah shebichsav. A couple weeks ago, we talked about what that might mean because it's hard to read that literally. Va mitzvah zu mishnah. Asher kosav di elin v'yemiksuvim. Lahay raysam zeh gemara. Melamed shekula nitlo Moshe b'Sinai. State meforesh. That Mishnah, Gemara, they were all given to Moshe at Sinai. In other words, all the details were given to Moshe at Sinai, sort of like the Chazal that Avram quoted a couple minutes ago. Says Mefurish that everything in Gemara was given halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. So how could the Rambam say that there were all sorts of details that weren't given to Moshe at Sinai? So how would the Rambam respond? So first of all, like we said, could be the Rambam would say it's a machlokes in Chazal. There are many sources in Chazal, we'll see them a little bit later, that say things like, Klalim Nemru L'Moshe B'Sinai Pratim weren't given to Moshe B'Sinai. So it could be it's a machlokes. But it could be that the Rambam would read this Gemara differently. Let's try to think about how the Rambam might have read this Gemara. So when the Gemara says that the Mishnah and the Gemara were given to Moshe B'Sinai, does that mean that literally the Mishnah was given? In other words, the text that was codified by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi more than 1,000 years later was given to Moshe at Sinai? Is that what it means? So the Gemara explains that the word mitzvah in this pasuk in Shmos is referring to Mishnah. Maybe the Rambam understands that the word Mishnah doesn't mean the text of Mishnayos. It means the Torah Shebaal Peh, the interpretation of the law. And that's something that the Rambam himself says, as we noted earlier. Likewise, when the Gemara says that Gemara was given to Moshe B'Sinai, does that mean the text of the Gemara? Or no? Maybe it means Talmudic analysis. It means the type of logic, of argumentation, of interpretation that we find in the Gemara was given at Sinai, like we already saw. The Rambam says that type of analysis was already used at Bimei Moshe Rabbeinu. So even this Gemara isn't necessarily Akasha. Second of all, that's approach number one we could take. Approach number two we could take is, anyway, perhaps this Gemara shouldn't be understood literally. Because after all, it seems very problematic to say that literally these texts were given. For example, when it says that the Mikra was given, that can't literally be true. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get Chamisha Chumshei Torah at Sinai, as we saw earlier. And certainly, it's very hard to imagine he got Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Did Moshe Rabbeinu literally get Sefer Yoshua? He read Sefer Yoshua? He read about Yoshua bringing Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael? That's a little weird. After all, think about how many times he davened that he be allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. It would be strange to say that he's already read Sefer Yoshua. So perhaps, as we said before, and in terms of methodologically, the Rambam says, when you see an Agadita like this that couldn't be understood literally, so you have to interpret it not literally. So perhaps the idea of this Agadita isn't that literally Nevi'im and Ksuvim were given, or for that matter, Mishnah and Gemara. It means the ideas, the concepts, or something along those lines. Perhaps the Rambam would not have read this Gemara literally. So we have basically stated three approaches to how the Rambam might deal with a text like this. Number one is the Rambam might have said it's a debate in Chazal, and the Rambam sided with the views in Chazal that say that details were not all given at Sinai. As we'll see, there are statements in Chazal that seem to support that view. Number two, the Rambam might say that when it says Mishnah and Gemara, it doesn't mean literally Mishnah and Gemara in terms of the text. It means the ideas of Tarshu Baal Peh and the methodology of Tarshu Baal Peh. And number three is that anyway, the Rambam would probably say we shouldn't understand this Gemara literally. So along similar lines, we could say to the Yerushalmi that Avram quoted before about Kol Masha Talmud Vasek Asik Lahoris Nel Moshe Sinai, that too doesn't mean it literally. It doesn't make sense that every Chiddush that a Talmud Vasek literally said, 3,000 years later was already given to Moshe Sinai. Is that true? First of all, then it wouldn't be a Chiddush. Number two is, how do you explain the Rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara Menachos, sitting in the back of Rabbi Akiva's classroom and wondering what in the world is going on? He already heard it. What's so surprising? Why do you already feel better when he says it's for Moshe? So we could take similar approaches to these types of statements, and that would address that question. So we have two questions left from the Chavlus Yair, and these are, I think, actually the hardest questions on the Rambam. Now, these two questions don't actually undermine the Rambam's theory, as the first four questions tried to do, but rather they undermine particular points that the Rambam says when presenting his theory. And these kashas are taka, very strong kashas, and the approach that we're going to suggest to answering these kashas are from the Rav. Rav is a beautiful piece on this. It's something you should all read. It's in Shiurim Lezecher Nishmas Avi Mori. It's in Chelek Aleph. It's the essay that's entitled Shnei Sugei Mesoires. And you should all read this idea. We're going to present certain ideas from this Bekitzer. But certainly there's a lot more to be said on this topic. So the Chavos Yair asks on the Rambam. The Rambam claimed that there was no debate when it comes to Halacha Moshe Mesinai, and he shows that there are indeed cases where the Gemara seems to debate ideas, things that are Halacha Moshe Mesinai. So the Rav suggested that we have to answer that there's two classes of Mesorah. The first relates to the human understanding and interpretation of the Torah, about which we do find dispute. The Rav calls this Mesoires HaMisyacheses LeLimud VeKuach Maaseh UMatan BeHora'as Sichlus. And the second type of Mesorah is simply something which is transmitted from one generation to the next, about which there is no human input. It's simply a transmission. Mesores shel Kabbalah. What the Rambam is telling us is that we find debate regarding the former category and not regarding the latter category. And moreover, when it comes to the former category, a lesser Beis Din could argue with a greater Beis Din. The Rambam writes this explicitly in Hilchos Mamrim, when the Gemara says that Ein Beis Din Yachol Lachlok Al Beis Din Shel Chaveru Elin Ken Gadol Menu Chachma Minyan, that's talking about legislation. It's not talking about the interpretation of the Torah. When it comes to the interpretation of the Torah, every Beis Din is obligated to interpret the Torah to the best of their ability. And if they understand the Torah saying X, even if an earlier Beis Din, which was much greater, interpreted the Torah saying Y, the Beis Din should be a mem, has to follow. You have to follow the interpretation of the Torah that you think is correct, because it relates to human understanding, the first type of Mesorah. When it comes to the second type of Mesorah, so Svara is irrelevant. Rios are irrelevant, because those are all relevant only in with respect to the human intellect. With respect to the human intellect, so then there is there's room for arguments, for kashas, for pirchas, and the like, but not with respect to something that's just Mesorah. When it comes to the second category, there's no debate. And if there's something that seems like a debate, it doesn't have a shem machlokas. It's not really a debate. One view is right and one view is wrong. When it comes to the first type of machlokas, we could say, yeah, they come to different practical conclusions, but they're both right. When it comes to the second type of debate, if there is a debate about something, there isn't room for two views. It's whatever Moshe heard. And the other view is wrong. So what seems to be a machlokas cannot be called a machlokas. Machlokas is when there's legitimacy to both perspectives. When it comes to something that's a Mesorah, there isn't legitimacy to the other perspective. And that's why when we find in the Gemara, one person says something, the other person says, I have a Mesorah Faker, that's the end of the story. There's nothing to talk about. There's no room for debate. So even if there is a dissenting view, that's not considered machlokas. And the dissenting view has to retract. It seems like a machlokas, but it's not an actual machlokas, because only one view is legitimate. That's why, for example, Lamashel, there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban about what it means. There's a halacha Moshe Mesinai that there's 11 days between Yemei Nida and Yemei Ziva. And the question is, what does that mean? According to the Ramban, that means that the Yemei, once the Yemei, after the 11 days have passed, then she automatically becomes a Nida again. Doesn't matter how long it is. And the Rambam has this idea that it goes back and forth. Now you'll say, one second, it's a halacha Moshe Mesinai, we have a debate. So first of all, I think the Rambam would agree that if the Ramban had said, I have a Mesorah, so the Rambam would certainly have agreed. He would have accepted that. But the Ramban and the Rambam didn't have a Mesorah about this. This was something that wasn't practical for already 1,000 years. So somehow or another, the application was forgotten. The Rambam isn't claiming that no, he says this explicitly, that no Chacham ever forgot something about which the Mesorah. He was just saying that when the other view said, I have a Mesorah, he would retract. Okay, so that's kasha number one with the tarot based off of the Rav. The kasha number two, or really number six in our list, is cases that the Rambam calls halacha Moshe Mesinai. It's very interesting. The Rambam says, so we never find any machlokas about halacha Moshe Mesinai, and now I'm going to list all the halachas of Moshe Mesinai. And you'll see that I'm right. So he lists a whole list of halacha Moshe Mesinai's. And what's really strange is that some of them seem to be dinim derabanan. So how could that be? How could the Rambam say that these are dinim derabanan, meaning to say rabbinic legislation? Halacha Moshe Mesinai means that they come from Moshe Mesinai. What does the Rambam mean? So here the Rav says a very interesting idea. The Rambam writes in his Hakdama to Mishneh Torah, where is the authority of the Talmud Bavli? That's why is it that we have to accept the Talmud Bavli? Why can't we argue? You know, Chachamim are always arguing with each other. Okay, generally speaking, Achronim might not argue with Rishonim, but probably technically they could, and sometimes they did. But nobody ever argues with the Gemara, so why not? What's the authority of the Talmud Bavli? The Rambam answers that's because Talmud Bavli was accepted by the entire Jewish people. And accordingly, it has the status of a ruling of Sanhedrin. Meaning to say that once the Sanhedrin comes to a certain conclusion, you must accept them, as the Gemara, the Pesukim say in Dvarim Perek Yud Zayin, Al Pi HaTorah She'Yaruch Ha'Al Mishpat She'Yom Lecha Ta'aseh Lo Sasam Nadav She'Yagidu Lecha Yemin U'Smal. According to Rambam, that's true with respect to the interpretation of the law as well as with respect to legislation. So once the Sanhedrin made a takana, so that's binding. Because, and likewise, once the Talmud Bavli was accepted by all Klal Yisrael, that became binding. You couldn't argue with it anymore. Now, what does that tell you? And the Rambam notes, by the way, that since that time, since Chasimus HaShas, we'll talk a little bit later about what Chasimus HaShas means, but since Chasimus HaShas, there's never been any text that has been universally accepted like the Talmud Bavli, meaning to say that at most, post-Talmud, we have local authority. So the enactments of a Beis Din in a particular city might be binding upon the residents of that particular city. But there's no such thing as a, there's never been such a thing as a idea which has become universally accepted, whether with respect to legislation or interpretation, really, since Chasimus HaShas. Now, let's try to understand, what does that mean? What is the Rambam telling us when he says that if all of Klal Yisrael accept a particular idea, like the conclusions of the Talmud Bavli, by the way, that means where there's a clear conclusion. Sometimes the conclusion of the Bavli is unclear. That's why some Rishonim will say the conclusion is it's mutter, and some Rishonim will say it's aser, and then again, there's no authority. But the conclusions that are clear, now there's nobody ever says, oh, the Gemara is wrong. So what does that tell us? That the fact that they were universally accepted grants them authority and legitimacy. So what does that mean? So it tells us that the Rav suggested, and this is an idea that's also found in Rav Elchanan and other Achronim, that the authority of Sanhedrin really comes from the people as well. In other words, the reason why the Sanhedrin is authoritative is because of the people. They are the representation of the people. And thus, when you have a group of chachamim or a document that's accepted by the Jewish people, even if there was no formal Sanhedrin, it has the same status as a ruling that was given by Sanhedrin. And that's why post-Talmudic enactments are compulsory if they're found in the Talmud Bavli, since they were universally accepted. And the Rav said this explains also, by the way, how Sanhedrin and Smicha could be reconstituted when you have all the Chachamim getting together. That very famous Chiddush of the Rambam that he says in a number of places, including Hilchos Sanhedrin at the end of Perek Dalet, of Perek Mishnayos. What's the idea? The idea is very simple, because again, that is, since Sanhedrin's authority always comes from, in a sense, the people, so that could be reconstituted if you have a group of chachamim representing all the people. This is also why the halacha is that if Sanhedrin made a takana that was not accepted by the Jewish people, it's not binding, and it doesn't even need to be rescinded. In other words, a gzeira that the tzibor isn't mekabel is not binding. Why? If their legislative authority was inherent, so then if it wasn't accepted by the Jewish people, it's still on the law books. It still has to be followed until they remove it. But if you understand that their authority stems from the people, so memel, if the people didn't accept it, you don't even have to be oker such a gzeira. You have to clarify that it wasn't accepted, but fundamentally, it's non-binding because it only becomes part of the Torah Shebaal Peh if the Jewish people accept it. Then it becomes part of the second category of Mesorah, and then there's no debate. So this is the idea that the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is saying, when he lists things that are halacha moshe misinai that sound like they're takanos d'rabbanan, he's not saying halacha moshe misinai doesn't mean literally l'moshe misinai. It means the second category of Mesorah. It means ideas that whose authority is absolute and can't be questioned and can't be challenged. Any takana of Sanhedrin that was accepted by Klal Yisrael, or even post-Sanhedrin that was accepted universally by Klal Yisrael, has the status of the second category of Mesorah. Memela, there could be no debate. And that's why the Rambam, when he lists all the Lachum Moshe Messina, is really what he's saying is, what are the things that are part of the second category of Mesorah? The Rav writes over there, that's why the Rambam, that's why the Rav rejected Reginer Tchelas. Why did he reject Reginer Tchelas? Because the authenticity of Tchelas, what constitutes Tchelas, something that's part of the second category of Mesorah. So you need a Mesorah for it. So you could bring all the Rayos in the world. A person could discover Tchelas and they have archaeological Rayos and they have other Rayos and they have halachic Rayos and they have scientific Rayos. All that doesn't matter because for a Mesorah, you need a Mesorah. If it's part of the second category, like the identity of a particular thing referred to in the Torah, namely Tchelas, for Mesorah can't be recreated. The only way to recreate a Mesorah is through Nevi'im. That's what the Rambam writes in the Chosmei Sebechira, according to the Gemara Zvachim. The Gemara says that when it comes to the Makom HaMikdash, the Makom of the Beis HaMikdash, the Makom of the Mizbeach, so there was no way to reestablish that except Al-Yidei Nevuah. Because without Nevi'im, you couldn't reestablish a Mesorah. It's part of the second category of Mesorah. And if you take a look at the Rambam in the Sakhtamah to Mishnah, he seems to be actually making this very point. When he says, what point? That things that are shayach, that were universally accepted, are shayach to the second category of Mesorah, not to the first. Listen to what the Rambam writes. Ukshatipol askama al achas min agzeiros, ein cholek aleha b'shum panim. When there's a haskama on the gzeiros, no one could argue with it. Not even based in Shigadol Mehem B'chachmo V'minyan. Meaning, say, if there was a Takana Gzeira that was enacted by a Beis Din, and a later Beis Din arises that's greater than the first Beis Din, that's greater than a Beis Din that enacted the Takana. Since it was a Gzeira that was Niskabla on Klal Yisrael, it has the din of the second status of second category of Mesorah, and no one could argue. Not even a Beis Din that's Gadol Mehem B'chachmo V'minyan. Pashut Yisura B'chol Yisrael Ein Lachlok Ala Gzeira Hi Afilu Anavim Ba'atman. Once it's nispashet, it's part of the second category of Mesorah, so nobody could argue, not even the Nevi'im. Lo hayu rishayim levatel osav. V'kacham Reb Talmud, shel yo zachor latov. Lo hayu yachol levatel. Echad mishmona sardav dvarim shedagar zru beishamay veisil. Yudches dvarim. So that was accepted. Okay, it's interesting how they accepted how beishamay became dominant on that day. Well, we'll leave that aside. But the point is, at the end of the day, it was accepted, and Eliyahu himself couldn't argue. Not with Nevuah, not with nothing. Viviutam al ze lefi she isuran pashat b'chol Yisrael. So that is what the Rambam says, and that would address the sixth kasha of the Chavos Yair. Okay, so where does this leave us, and where are we going to go from here? So I think what we still would like to try to figure out a little more is the Rambam told us that debate proliferated in Klal Yisrael because the Sanhedrin no longer resolved the Machloksin. We saw the Rambam, the Gemara basically said that. And the question is not. Rambam said it was relating to the Bittel Sanhedrin. And the question is, why was the Sanhedrin batal? Now, you might say it means because literally it was batal. You know, they ceased to exist. But the problem is it's not true because the Sanhedrin did continue to exist well after they left Yerushalayim. They left the Makom HaMikdash 40 years before the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, which, by the way, corresponds, the Rambam says that's associated with the death of Shammai and Hillel, and they correspond. Shammai died in the year 30. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70, approximately. So it's very, very meduyuk, according to Rambam. But one way or the other, it's not like the Sanhedrin ceased to exist. The Sanhedrin went into exile, but it went from place to place. It went to 10 different places. It was in Yavne. It ended up in Teria. So why couldn't they resolve these machloksin? And in fact, you'll say, well, maybe it's for some reason they could only resolve these machloksin in Yerushalayim. That's not true, because they did resolve many machloksin. For example, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, when the Sanhedrin was in Yavne, under the authority of Rabbi Gamliel, they finally resolved all those shailas, all those debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So why didn't they resolve all other questions? So this is actually a great mystery. And I don't have a clear-cut answer. I'll share with you next week, Amir Tzashem, some of my thoughts on the matter. And Bezra Sashem will try to come up with the Mahalich, and we'll try to develop an idea of how to relate to Machlokas as well. So that's next week, Amir Tzashem. I want to wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. I also wanted to let you know, you might have seen the signs already, that B'siyata Dishmaya Shabbos HaGadol, Ravan Lapiansky, my Rebbe, is going to be in Yeshiva for Shabbos. It's an amazing opportunity to hear from him. And for those who are able to come for Shabbos and stay for Shabbos, it's really kedai. I'm hoping to come in for Shabbos as well, so I get to hear him. If you're able to come, you won't regret it, I imagine. Okay, everyone, have a good Shabbos. And if there are other questions, I'm happy to take them now.
Have a good Shabbos.
Thanks, have a good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a good Shabbos.
Sure, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Good Shabbos, Mayor.